Hey guys, it's June 17th. Welcome to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast, the Saturday podcast today. Hey, it's brought to you by you guys, our good friends who are part of our Patreon page. Want to welcome all of you to donate to our Patreon page once a month. We're going to start to do some really cool things with this down the road, where if you donate, you get rewards. You're going to get discounts on t-shirts. We're going to profile you on CycloneFanatic.com. We're going to give you shout outs on podcasts, all sorts of great things. But it's really the future of how we're going to fund the website. Of course, we're still going to have our great partnerships with our local advertisers. But we want to make Cyclone Fanatic better for you. We want to be able to cover the Cyclones more. We want to be able to make the site better, more usable, all that good stuff. We've never charged a dime over our 8-9 year history. We're still not charging a dime. But if you enjoy our product, if it's valuable to you, we welcome you to donate to our Patreon page. There's buttons all over Cyclone Fanatic where it says Support Cyclone Fanatic. It's super easy. You go in there. It's a safe, secure site. It's a monthly deal. It comes straight out of your credit card. There's like 20,000 of you that come onto our site every day. Right now, we have about 230 donates, or patrons, that is. So we'd really like to get that number up into the thousands, and then we can start to do a lot of cool things here at Cyclone Fanatic. Today's Saturday podcast is it'll be a fun one today. Rob Gray joins me, and fun piece you had with Wayne Morgan. Really fun piece. What was it like talking to Wayne Morgan? You talked to him for like an hour, right?
Yeah, it was fun talking to Wayne. I mean, he had a reputation as a kind of difficult guy with the media, I think, during his 3-year run as head coach. He was great. And there are lots of great stories about Wayne, some of which came from him, and I relayed in the story and in the extra piece, which was, you know, kind of like extra quotes that didn't quite fit into the overall narrative of the big tome at the beginning.
The extra piece was just as fun. That story from Tark.
Oh, that
about Tark was the best.
I love that. I can just see it happening. Yeah. He's got his towel with him, maybe, and he's watching. And as Wayne had said, you know, with Larry, it would be 1 hour of rebounding and 2 hours of defense, or 2 hours of rebounding and 1 hour of defense. And it was just harping on that constantly. And Tarkanian, of course, they were known for that run and gun style.
Yeah.
And he's watching them, and they're not really working on their offense at all. And just, Wayne, is every day like this? Wayne's like, yes. Yes, it is.
Indeed. Could you imagine just like sitting around a dinner table with Larry Eustace, Jerry Tarkanian, and Wayne Morgan?
I think we'd probably have to have a bottle or two in the middle of the table.
Oh, my God. It'd be amazing.
It would be fantastic.
Wayne Morgan, to me, and we're just going to kind of relive the Wayne Morgan era today on the Saturday podcast, is Rob's Where Are They Now piece on him. Highly recommended. Go check that out. And then he's doing the Where Are They Now extra now, too, which is a nice touch. It's like the good quotes that didn't make the story. Wayne is fascinating to me. He was only there for 2 years as the head coach. But the fact that this guy was a Big 12 basketball head coach, coached in an NCAA tournament, should have been the only coach in Big 12 history to win at Allen Fieldhouse twice.
Yep.
He should have been. And now he sells insurance. Like, it's just a very interesting story, because most of those guys, I mean, if you coach in an NCAA tournament like Wayne did, you're going to be an assistant somewhere. You're going to be a high-level assistant at a high major.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne starts selling satellite dishes.
Yep.
In Ames for years. He's playing acoustic guitar out at some bar in North Ames.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah. He coaches at Hofstra for like a year, and now he's in the insurance game. Like, it is fascinating to me how he's not coaching basketball somewhere.
Yeah. And I think it's a bit frustrating to him. But what struck me about him is there was, you know, there were a few off the record conversations we had, but he really is, you know, he's shunning the idea of resentment, because I mean he could feel a certain way about the way it went down when he was fired. There was the quote unquote scandal with the D1 scheduling stuff, and he had talked about how there were investigations. He was cleared, blah, blah, blah. There's
I was
maybe access to grind and all that. But
yeah, I always wondered if we didn't know everything about that, and that's why he didn't get a job.
And perhaps that's the case, but I mean, the guy worked. I think about, and I love the story he told that I included in the main, where the now piece where he worked with Ronnie Cicely. Great, what, 10, 11-year NBA veteran who's now like a world-famous DJ that works all over. He gets paid like as Wayne said, and this, I was going to throw this in, but I'd gone extensively into the funny story with Boeheim, how he was teaching him.
Yeah.
Where it was like, okay, so I'm teaching him this move and the counter move and the this and the this and then and Boeheim says, what are you doing? It's like, well, I'm teaching him this and it's. All he needs is a move and a counter. All he needs is a freaking move and a counter move. And he walks away from him. He's like, oh, okay. All right, that's it. But, yeah, he's like a DJ. And I think Wayne said he's like, yeah, he's one of those guys that they'll pay the Kardashians will pay $100,000 to come into a DJ.
Ronnie Cicely is.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Lebanese-born big man who, as he said, could not walk and chew gum at the same time when he showed up at Syracuse.
Wayne was adamant in the piece that had he not been fired, I believe he said they would have won Big 12 championships and gone to Final Fours.
He did. And he was laughing the whole time. I mean, he was fairly jovial. It reminded me of when I was at the register and I had a week of vacation left. And it's
they give employees vacation at Gannett?
Occasionally they do, but frequently people don't redeem them all. See Randy Peterson, Tommy Birch.
I was going to say, others. Pete Weeks works all the time.
Yeah. But I had a week left, and I took my vacations, damn it. And somehow didn't get canned. But I had a week of vacation left, and it's the last week of the year, and I'm like, I'm just going to take it off until after the new year.
Yeah.
And Bryce Miller, the editor at the time, great editor, now in San Diego as a columnist.
Love Bryce.
He said, well, you could take your vacation, you could go cover Iowa State in Hawaii. And I hadn't covered college. I was covering high schools and auto racing. You remember me as an auto racing dude.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I think I'll go ahead and go with the Hawaii because I can wrap the vacation in. And I think I've talked about on the podcast before what a fantastic gig that was. But I remember calling up Wayne and just he was very genial. He was, you know, pretty, you know, outgoing, friendly, and I'd heard stories about him being fairly combative. I think I did ask him when they finally lost a game something about the fast break baskets they were giving up, and he gave me this deadpan answer about how kind of like when you go fast you can give up a lot of point, or you know, something. He was just kind of like saying you're an idiot to me. But he was nice, and he was nice in this too. I mean, he was laughing about the stories and the one he told about Cicely and the one he told about winning those championships. You know, that one team wasn't going to win them all. You know, and the regular season titles in the Big 12, obviously alluding to Kansas. So it was really an enjoyable interview, and I wasn't sure what it was going to be like.
I was worried about that too. Well, what I always remember of Wayne, and I think this is just the case with head coaches in general, I think we saw it with Paul Rhodes too. Specifically, he comes to mind. McDermott never really got this way because it's just not his personality. I mean, Greg could throw away an answer really well. Mm-hmm. You know, he could answer a question without answering the question. He had a skill to do that. And Fred really never lost, so he never had to deal with it. What I've noticed, Rob, about these coaches is when they begin their career, they're great with the media. Mm. They're all about giving the media as much access as they want because they're working with the media so they can reach you guys who are listening, the fans. This is how it works. Yeah. It has nothing to, I know that you guys don't give a crap about how much access we get. However, you would if you guys aren't getting your stories and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then once something negative happens, and then another thing negative happens, and then the media starts to have to, like, dig a little bit. That's when these guys start to really resent the reporters, and that's when the access shuts down, and generally where they get combative. And Wayne did that pretty early in that second year. I mean, he had some drama, too. I mean, I remember one press conference where Will Blalock, like, called out the bigs. Like, he had a tough group of dudes to – because that first year was pretty easy because there were zero expectations. They went to the NIT, right?
Yep.
And you also had like Holman, Vroman, and Sullivan who were the clear leaders. They were keeping track of those guys. Well, then Kurt and Will and those boys came in. How many years was Wayne there? Wayne was there 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I said two earlier.
Yeah, his last year was 16 and 14.
Yeah. But that second, I mean, there were a lot of egos in that group. Mm-hmm. And you had, like, these new guys coming in who were highly touted, like Sean Taggart and stuff, but they probably weren't mature enough to be given the roles that they were at that time, being that there weren't a ton of leaders on the team. And I think Wayne had a tough job with that locker room. And then everything just kind of boiled over at the end, and he did get pretty combative. But I never really felt it came from a bad place. I felt it was out of frustration because he's looking at it like, man, we have all this talent. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, he cared about coaching. And as he said, when I asked him about the tragic death of Jackson Vrooman, I had basically said, was that just a ton of bricks situation, just hitting me? He's like, yeah, ton of bricks. I mean, you coach these guys. He lost Pearl Washington, who he coached at Syracuse, and a couple other guys. He said, and I include him in the extra, I think, or in the story where it was like, you feel like you're a parent. You feel like you're a father to those people, or you feel like they're your children. And I think that's how we felt. And I think he coached in a way where he allowed players a fair amount of freedom. I mean, when they finally broke that 28-game road losing streak in Texas, the story was they couldn't fly out because there was a mechanical problem. So Wayne just said, all right, guys, you're in Austin. Have some fun. He just broke a 28-game road losing streak. Nothing bad came out of it, but I don't think there was a whole lot of sleep had that night for the Cyclones. In that situation, I think he was about having fun and a departure. I think Larry wants his players to have fun, but he also is going to pound them and pulverize them into something that he can build back up, kind of like a boot camp sort of deal, which is why there's the laser-like focus on rebounding and defense. You don't have to practice your offense because you guys have been doing that your whole life, that kind of stuff. And I think Wayne was kind of brought in that more fun, freewheeling style that he'd honed at Long Beach State. And, they just started trapping more. It's so amazing some of the things that his teams did. Like,
they were fun to watch.
And he mentioned starting the season where they ran it in North Carolina in the second round, the eventual champion North Carolina in the second round of the tournament. They started 0-4 in the Big 12, and they won like 6-7 in a row.
Weren't they 0-5? I thought they were 0-5.
I think it was 0-4 because I went through the book again.
Dude, and
then they beat four top 25 teams. I think he might have said five. I mean,
one at Kansas, one at Texas.
Yeah, and you win at Kansas the year after they steal a win from you. The officials are so incompetent.
You know what I remember about that season too, and this was classic Wayne Morgan ball. It was they'd win at Kansas and Texas, and Texas was number five, I want to say, and Kansas was number three when they beat them.
Yeah, I think Kansas was two, and I know Texas was up there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think they were both top five teams. And what I remember about that specifically is that they lost to Nebraska at home. Barry Collier's Nebraska team came in and beat them late in that season. And the only reason I point that out is to point out how, like, wildly inconsistent that team was, where they literally could beat anyone anywhere, and they could lose to anyone anywhere.
Yeah, and Stinson had 29 in that game at Kansas.
He was great. I'll never forget watching that game on TV.
As Wayne said, I think he remembered him scoring the last four or five baskets. I was trying to find video, and there was a video of the Phantom 3 at the Fog from the year before. Wayne says if they would have won that game and at Nebraska, which they kind of – I don't want to say choke, but did not execute late and lost by three. They're in the tournament. I think if they just win at Kansas, they're in the tournament that year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they could have done some damage. I mean, people don't like to hear this, but when you're in the NIT and you get deep into it, you're playing – I mean, teams that are in the Final Four of the NIT are teams that are capable of making the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely.
They just didn't put it all together throughout the season. They had some injuries or something happened.
No, you're right.
And
absolutely,
that team, as he said, and John Walters, who was gracious enough to lend me some details from his memories of Wayne's era, said that first season for him, I mean, it could have been so much more with the talent you had on that team. Just a few things go wrong, and you're right. That second year, though, the wild inconsistency where you're like, wow, this team is – they're a bunch of world beaters. If you can do this and that. I mean, one story I didn't even include in the extra was Wayne said that Jimmy Williams was an assistant at Oklahoma State at the time, and I believe – you know, Eddie Sutton was coaching at the time, and I think they made the Final Four that year that they made the tournament. And Wayne had also talked about how they kind of had them in the Big 12 tournament, but did not execute down the stretch.
Yeah. Was that the year that he got fired?
The next year he got fired.
Okay.
Wayne did.
Who did they lose to that year in the tournament?
I can't remember.
It was Texas.
Yeah. But he said Jimmy Williams called him up in his office, and he's just like, why is he calling me? You know, and it was after they beat Kansas. And he said that Williams said, I just wanted to call you and congratulate you because what you've done is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. And then he said, I said, what are you talking about? That's what Morgan said. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about, man?
And then Williams said, Wayne, you've just beat like five top 25 teams in a row, but more importantly, you beat Kansas at Kansas. And then Wayne said, I'm kind of like, oh, yeah, thanks. And he goes, no, you don't understand. He goes, I work for Coach Eddie Sutton. He's never beaten Kansas at Kansas. Bob Knight's never beaten Kansas at Kansas. You beat Kansas at Kansas. I needed to call you.
That's phenomenal.
And then after he tells that story and laughs a little bit, he goes, so that was an accomplishment.
I love it, man. He's such a great character. I wish he was around.
Yeah.
I do. I feel like there's just this really negative connotation with Wayne, and for some reasons I think it's probably appropriate. I mean, he wasn't their best X's and O's coach, but his teams were fun. He was a hell of a recruiter, and you got to remember what he took over. Like, I know that, you know,
it's
Larry
in a shambles, yeah.
Yeah, but it was a divided program.
Yeah, and Larry's last team won, I believe, 12 games. I mean, he'd come down, I mean, before the partying photos, and you know, talking about his players reportedly while he's partying with college students in Columbia and elsewhere, taking the bus, you know, by himself while the team goes. I mean, it had really, really devolved into something pretty ugly. I mean, they weren't winning games. And then you have those stories come out and the pictures come out.
Yeah.
And Wayne is just kind of elevated. He said in part by default, but also the fact that I believe there was a rule at the time that you could only sign a certain number of people to a recruiting class. And the thought was a lot of players were going to leave. A lot of players were thinking about leaving.
So after Larry
got fired. Vandevelde was talking to Wayne constantly, you know, make sure the guys are doing well, make sure they're going to class, make sure this, keep your finger on the pulse of the program. And he did that, and there were other guys that came in and interviewed, Wayne said, but he felt like those guys were wondering, you know, are we even going to have a team, you know, based on how many people are going to leave if Coach X takes the job or this and that. And there are so many what-ifs. I mean, if Morgan isn't fired after his third season, does Stinson and or Blaylock decide, you know what, I'll do 4 years at Iowa State rather than head out, and it didn't work out for either one. Stinson, fortunately, was able to, you know, have some good, you know, was great in the D-League, helped Iowa, was the MVP, helped the Iowa Energy to a title, now the Iowa Wolves, and made money overseas. Blaylock was an actual drafted player, but Wayne was very, very impassioned when he talked about how Curtis Stinson didn't at least get a cup of coffee in the NBA, and it blows my mind, too.
Yeah.
And I was covering Curtis some of that time in the D-League for the Register. I'd always have to ask the question because what do you think? I mean, you're not – how does it affect you that you're not getting even that 10-day contract when so many of your teammates are, so many guys that you're beating in this league are getting it? And he was always diplomatic about it. I mean, I think as Wayne said – said some off-the-record stuff too, but I mean, he was just blew his mind. I mean, he talked about one of the most unfair things he's seen in basketball, that Curtis Stinson didn't get a shot in the NBA.
I've always wanted to learn more about the Wayne Morgan exodus after he was fired, because I knew how upset he was, that he thought he had been wrong. He didn't think that a lot of times you get fired and you're like,
yeah,
I saw this coming.
Yep.
Nobody really saw that coming. I thought Wayne's job was safe. Now, I was just starting at Cyclone Nation at the time, and I didn't really have a lot of great sources or anything. But that that hit me and our staff like a ton of bricks. We didn't see that happening. And I remember getting a call from Steve Dace, who was my boss at the time, and he's just like, hey, you have camera rolling, like this could be explosive. Because Wayne decided to have his own press conference at some hotel after he got fired. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Like where the guy like sets up and sends out a media alert, I'm going to have a press conference. So we all thought Wayne was going to just go off. He really didn't. It was pretty classy. But like that whole team was just standing there. I think everybody was there. Really showing their support for Wayne. And then basically everybody transferred.
Yep.
Curtis and Will went pro.
Yep.
Again, Will got drafted. I think he was Mr. Irrelevant. He was the last
pick.
Yeah,
he was very late in the
draft. And Curtis didn't. Taggart goes to Memphis. Tashig Carr went to St. Joe's.
Yep.
And then I think
hero of that Texas game too.
Remember when he spiked the ball in the Longhorn? That was awesome. That was great. I loved Tashig Carr. He had some real promise. I wonder because remember Tashig Carr said that he was going to come back. He was at the McDermott press conference when Greg got hired. He had said he was coming back, and then he doesn't. And I think Greg only had like two or three. I think three scholarship guys when he first got that job. And Rashawn Clark was the one.
It's a tough place to start, yeah.
Who stuck around.
Yep.
And there was a couple other ones, but they weren't.
It was very glaring.
Ross Marsden.
How Clark stuck around. So many people had left, as you said, the exodus. And it was huge that he had. I mean, that team would have been probably like a 7-win team. I mean, he was so good and so important.
Yeah, and I was
to bridge that gap. And they never were even a 500 team. Well, with Greg as a coach.
I always wonder, too, and Greg has such a bad rap around Iowa State, and he didn't win. I get it. Had Curtis and Will stuck around, I really think that the whole McDermott era is different.
Yeah.
Because when you have to start off the way that he did in recruiting, you have to reach. I mean, there's no way about it. When you get the job at that time, you have that many scholarship guys, and you're told that they're coming back. Because I know for a fact that the McDermott staff thought that a good chunk of those guys were coming back because they were told that.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know.
Kind of behind the eight ball there.
People hate Greg here because he didn't win. But I think if you look at what Greg has done elsewhere, he's won.
Won at Creighton.
And Creighton's in the Big East now. And I mean, he last year had his best player not been – kicked off the team, and for rightful reasons,
great
by the way.
Great basketball league.
Yeah, they were a top 10 team there for a while. Like, they were competing with the Villanovas of the world. Like, they were really – he can coach. He really struggled with Iowa State in the standpoint, but you can't say he didn't recruit because he brought in NBA players. Mm-hmm. It was what they did when they got there, and I think he had a hard time with the egos and stuff.
And maybe keeping them there.
Yeah, maybe he wouldn't have done well with Curtis and Will and those guys. I don't know. I'm just saying, I've always wondered that in the back of my mind, what if? What if Curtis and Will and Tashid and Taggart stick around when that transition is made?
There's so many dynamics in play. I mean, that's a good team if those guys stick around. That's a potentially at least a team that – knocks on the door, if not makes the NCAA tournament. And then you haven't fallen way behind. Then you're not signing some people who don't belong on Iowa State's roster.
Corey McIntosh's and Doty Dunson's, and then you get trouble guys in there, right? I mean, Mike Taylor was an incredible talent, but you're taking a major risk when you bring that guy in. And I don't know. It's fascinating to me.
It is.
And Maybe Greg couldn't have handled them too, Rob. I don't know. Maybe Greg wouldn't have been – his style wouldn't have worked. But
yeah, especially after they'd gotten used to that, up-tempo, they're gonna trap, they're going to run and all that kind of stuff, which is not generally Greg's style, although his teams will run. I mean, even Larry's would. They just had to the circumstances had to dictate that for them. But I think Wayne kind of – gets a bad rap. I mean, you look at it, probably should have had two NCAA tournament teams. And the last team, 16-14. It's not like Larry's last team was 12-18 or something like that. The guys like playing for him. I mean, as far as I can tell. I did reach out to Holman via text, and he didn't get back to me.
Where's stuff, he at now? Like Greece still, or
last I talked to him,
he was in Greece.
He was gonna. When I did the Where Are They Now, he was getting close to maybe wrapping up his long European career, successful career, but of course he has the famous.
The Victoria's Secret model
yeah. wife, and he had talked about. I really enjoy talking to him for that. Where Are They Now? About you know, just he still has land, you know, his family's farm,
yeah.
and how much that still kind of calls to him a little bit. But I mean, I wasn't able to connect with him for it, so I guess it would have been nice to get some of those perspectives. But if you can stay on Jim Boeheim's staff for 12 years as an assistant coach. You can coach basketball.
Yeah.
You know the game. All kinds of people who are armchair coaches sit there and go, oh, look at what Wayne did at this situation or what this and that. You know, they say the same stuff about Scott Drew. They say the same stuff about Steve Prohm sometimes. Any coach, you know, they're smarter than everyone else. The guy could coach. Now, was he a great coach? I don't know. But he was a great recruiter. We know that.
Yeah. He was, I would borderline elite recruiter.
Yeah. I agree. And I just think that had that team not run into North Carolina the second year, I think that's probably a Sweet 16 team. Had that team the first year won that game at Kansas, which they should have won, which is stolen from them with the three between Holman's free throws and the two that was made a three that forced overtime by Langford. That's a potential Sweet 16 team as well as it was playing down the stretch. And then you have one little down year, but as he said, bringing in another great recruiting class after that, which of course didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't doubt that they might have made a run at a regular season title or two. Now, would it have been great all the time? No, probably not. I mean, he even said that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, are we going to do it every year? No, but it's hard to do that every year anywhere, you know, unless you're at a Kentucky or, mm-hmm. you know, a few choice destinations like that.
Big plans for the weekend?
Well, I went to L.A. a while ago, so I don't have any big plans for a while. I will be going to the cabin in Minnesota in early July.
Cool.
Over the 4th, firing off some fireworks on the lake.
Nice. I'm going to be in Okoboji over the 4th.
That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Your lake won't be as nice as the one we're on.
Probably not. Mine's going
to be you'll have more fun.
Mine will be full of beer.
You'll push like light.
Women in bikinis. That's my type of lake.
It might be nicer. It might be nicer in retrospect.
I want to wish a happy wedding day today to my sister-in-law, Alexa, and my soon-to-be brother-in-law, Justin. That's what I'm doing all weekend down there. I'll be in southern Iowa all weekend, baby. Good times down there, but I'll be doing that with family. Jared today will be at Iowa State's football camp, a huge camp as far as recruiting goes, so look forward to coverage from that. And Jared has a busy weekend. He'll be at Cap City League on Sunday as well. So, Saturday podcast. We know you guys don't stop on the weekends, neither do we. Brought to you today by our Patreon page. I really am asking for help. We need more people donating. We appreciate the 230 plus patrons that we have. We need more if we're going to really take this thing to the next level. There's a support CycloneFanatic.com button every page of the website where you can click become a patron, and it's super easy. It's just a monthly deal that comes straight out of your credit card. It's safe. It's simple. You can give as little as $1 a month, or you can give more than that if you want as well. And it just goes to, you know, paying our server, paying for our coverage, paying our employees. I mean, that's what it's for. We're not going on fancy vacations.
Money. Think about $1 a month. That's 3 cents and change a day, you know, 3.3
Correct.
Cents.
Well, that's my deal. Like, if everybody could do that, like, I think about we'd be going to football road games. We'd be covering everything.
I'd be trying to track down Steele Jansen in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
You'd just be got your backpack.
I'd be out there for months.
Did you see that Steele Jansen changed his Facebook page?
This is the deal, and we have to wrap up I had become a friend of his on Facebook because I had some mutual friends who I was saying, I was like, yes, this is finally going to be a chance. I'll bide my time. I'll send him a message and say, hey, we're really interested in doing that. Then his Facebook vanished.
Disappeared.
It vanished.
He doesn't want.
It's gone. And now this thing is back, and not that many people who I know are friends.
So I told you I had an inside track to him, right?
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of his former teammates.
Okay.
one of his former teammates is going out to Tahoe this summer and claims he's going to help. He's going to talk to Steele to talk to us.
Ooh, this will be good.
Yeah.
And then I can talk to Steele about some of the conversations we had, and
yeah,
and we'll be good.
And if while you're at it, you may as well just offer him a podcasting position here at Cyclone Fanatic, the Steele Jantz podcast. Yeah, every week.
That would be outstanding.
Could you imagine the hits?
Oh, you're through the roof.
Thanks for listening. Have a great Saturday, everybody. Stay cool. Enjoy your weekend.